certain. Hello, I'm Estelle Kelly. I'm a retirement life coach and Alice Mantell, a Sydney-based lawyer and author. Today, we're going to dispel some of the unknowns and uncertainties that professionals have when they begin to think about retirement. Together, Alice and I hope to impart helpful information to enable listeners to face retirement and retirement planning without fear. And Alice is the author of this book, Every Woman's Guide to Retirement. It's very comprehensive coverage of the subject for Australian women, and you can purchase an electronic copy or a hard copy at Alice's website, mantelladvisory.com.au. Now, this series is titled Facing Retirement Without Fear, and we're still covering future-proofing your retirement. Today, Alice is going to share with us her knowledge of the legal aspects that we can face as we begin to age. Now, Alice, what do you mean? Can you just remind us, what do you mean by future-proofing your retirement?
Well, future-proofing is just another way of saying putting in some protections for yourself for the future when you might not be able to manage things as well as you are at the moment. There's no guarantee in that. But there are some things, particularly in the legal area, that we can do to make sure that we're prepared for the unexpected. Remember that you've got at least another 20 to 25 years of life ahead, and any number of things can happen. You know, something can happen to our health, to our partner's health. We can have a separation in our relationship. All we need to do is to prepare for the worst, plan for the worst, but hope for the good.
Thanks, Alice. It sounds like very good advice. So I imagine that as we get into that last third of our life span, it becomes ever more important to organise important documents, or should we say essential documents, Alice?
Yeah, it's one of those things that we tend to forget, that we actually acquire a lot of physical documents that tend to be, depending on how well organised or otherwise you are, we tend to just leave them in wherever we think is convenient. Now, what I'm suggesting is that you put your important or your essential documents in one place that your someone else coming into your house could easily find them. So the sort of documents that I was thinking about was your car registration, your insurances for your house and your car, your property certificate of title, if you've got it, you might not have it these days, and your will or power of attorney as well in the same place. And the other thing that you probably haven't thought about is the passwords for your computers and all your other gears. And I have a recent story about that. In this last week, heard about a woman who had a very debilitating stroke. She survived it and she's in hospital still, I think, at this stage. Her family wanted to access her laptop, which had contained a whole lot of this information, but she couldn't remember her password. And that was very difficult. And I've got other cases I've heard of where this happens. So it's a really useful thing to put a list of your passwords there so your family can access those documents. You don't need to necessarily tell people where those things are. Well, you should tell them where it is, but you don't have to tell them what's inside your will if you don't want to.
Okay. Thanks for that, Alice. And look, a little tip that I was given to add to what you've said is that purchase and record in a special little book or something and all those passwords to all those important or essential documents and keep them together in a very safe place. You know, I know at home I've got a metal fireproof box where I keep my will and that little notebook with all those things in it. And look, my laptop is it opens with facial recognition. So if you know, there's so many different things you have to think of, it seems, to so that when things do go wrong, people can help you out. So what are some of the legal issues that can arise as we get older?
Well, one of the things that I was thinking about was what happens when your long-term relationship breaks up. Unfortunately, if you look at the statistics, relationship breakup after the age of 50 is absolutely escalating, and you would not think this because you tend to think it's that breakups of, and I'll talk about marriages, but in fact I'm also including de facto relationships. The figures on de facto relationships are far more difficult to obtain, but with marriages, the rate, you tend to think that people who have been married less than 4 years makes up the amount, the majority of divorces. And that is the case. But the next most common age is people over 50 with long-term relationships. So over 20-year relationships, they are a growing cohort of divorces. Look, there are lots of reasons for that, but we won't go into them at this stage. But to say that the impact of a breakdown of a relationship at a later age is far more serious than it is as a younger person, because as a younger person, you can start again. An older person has a lot more difficulties with that. Now, let's just assume that you're going to have a civilized divorce and you walk away with, say, half of the property. That's what we would like to think. Don't forget your superannuation, in that it is actually essential to get good advice, because I think you will find that women tend to have a lot less superannuation than their partners. Particularly in a long-term relationship, if there are children. And you should be asking for some of the share of their superannuation, because that's going to help you start again. It's not being greedy about it. It's saying the reason that your partner has made a lot of money and been able to work non-stop throughout their life is because you have supported them and raised their children. Mm. So let's just say you've got a civilized divorce. You're going to have most people's major asset is their property, their family home. You will literally have half of that, and you won't be able to buy the same kind of house that you had before. So what are you going to do about it? My advice is that people try and buy a property in a similar area, and that could be a unit or something less than that. But it's very important to buy something that you can buy outright. And the problem is, of course, if you have a family house that still has a mortgage outstanding on it, you're going to have even less than what you had before. And that is a very difficult aspect for most people to get used to at a later stage, because obviously we have a certain kind of lifestyle as we get old. Remember that if you're an older person, the chances of you being able to get another home loan is very low. The banks do not like older applicants. You're not likely to get a loan. So my advice is, don't rent, because renting is a very precarious place to be. You'd be better off trying to buy something further out, but having a roof over your head is essential. Do not be tempted to move in with your children, because that's what a lot of people do. They suddenly think, oh, let's give the children something. Perhaps they can build me a granny flat. Do not start another relationship for exactly the same reason, because you need your own financial security before you embark on any of those things. You know, assisting your children is all very well, but assisting yourself is the most important, because your personal financial security does not rely on your children's decision as to where they live.
Alice. it sounds a bit harsh, but thank goodness there's people like you.
Well, I could give you more stories on that, but I won't.
Right.
They tend to be negative, I'm afraid to say.
Okay. All right. So should we have a will?
Yes, everybody needs to have a will over the age of 18. Wills are not particularly related to age, but we tend to think about it more as we get older because your family is suddenly interested in it. Your family wants to know what are they going to get? And you see, the problem is that people tend to put off making a will when they're younger. I've encountered numerous clients that were thought it was really bad luck. You know, they had a superstition, if I make a will, I'm going to die, and therefore they don't make a will. Now, the problem is that we don't know what's coming. You know, we could get hit by a bus, but we could also have any number of diseases, you know, accidents that happen to us. We could have a chronic disabling disease, all of those things which, you know, really affect our ability to have capacity. And lawyers, unfortunately, do have a tendency to talk about capacity, but it's very important in respect of making a will. You need to be of sound mind. So this is something we should plan for the future. Certainly not having a will and dying intestate can have a lot of problems. So perhaps you've had some experience in that area.
Yeah, look, I have, Alice. I'm one of five children, and look, our youngest sister, she unfortunately suffered a brain injury through disease when she was quite young. And it ended up that she lived in care for her whole life until she was in her 60s. Now, she never worked. And so, who would have thought that she had anything to leave when she passed away? But in fact, we discovered that when she did pass away, she, over the years, I don't know how it happened, but she had built up quite a little sum of money. And she died intestate because she never had the capacity to make a will. So we had to, we engaged some lawyers to help sort that out. It would have been a lot easier if she had had that capacity to write a will. But anyway, it all got sorted eventually. And
But it can be an expensive business just doing that. And I also have stories along those lines. Let me just say that it saved it. The point of having a will is to benefit the people that you love the most and to do it in an easy kind of way. Going to court is expensive. You can also benefit charities if you have nobody in particular that you want to give money to. That's fine. And one of the things you need to do, of course, is and appoint an executor for your will as well. And these are reasons why you need to do it to regularly review your will as well. So in the case of your sister, the laws of intestacy apply, and they're pretty much the same, I think, in most states. So this relates to members in the family who are entitled to have a share, which would be siblings in this case, probably, rather than parents, but it's a statutory requirement. So, and the other reason for actually making a will while you are well and able to do it is that it prevents that other increasingly awful thing that's happening in our society, and that's elder abuse. Because in my experience, this is something they call it, inheritance greed, I suppose, that the older parents are living longer, children are not getting what they feel that they're entitled to. So the parents, as they become more frail, are much more likely to be the subject of abuse. And abuse is not necessarily physical, but it can be. It can also be mental, emotional, that kind of thing that happens. I've certainly seen examples of that. And they become more interested in what you've got in your will. And that goes very much to getting you to the person to change their will in their favor. And I think that's another reason why I'm saying it's very important for you not to do a have a do-it-yourself will, because it's more likely that you can have, if you've got a child who wants something changed in their favor, that it gets changed in their direction. Going to a lawyer is a much better way to record what you want and why you want. And those notes that the lawyer will make will actually assist if there ever is a later challenge to the will. Mm-hmm. And let me just say, having a lawyer do your will is relatively not an expensive business. It's usually a few hundred dollars. Certainly the last time I went and had one made, it was only a few hundred dollars, and it gave me some peace of mind. So, as I say, I think reviewing your will is very important.
Yeah. And you often hear of, sorry to interrupt, Alice.
No, go ahead.
You often hear of the adult children, you know, there's a falling out between the siblings, and one feels as if the other is taking advantage of the elderly parent, and that they're being cut out totally from having a say about what happens to the estate. Not that it's their estate to do.
But I certainly have a story on that sort of point of one of my friends where there was a very ordinary little house, not worth that much, but the only asset in that parent's estate. And they happened to have, again, with five children, the youngest daughter was living in the house. Somehow she got the parents to change their will. She received a life estate. And that's, I can talk about life estates, which effectively meant that everybody else got nothing. And because she's the youngest daughter, she's perhaps 10, 15 years, you know, age gap between the oldest and the youngest. She will be living in that house and everybody else will not get anything. So, which is perhaps, you know, when everybody has become reasonably well off, that may not be an issue. But in that particular family, one of the children was a single mum who was struggling, and a small amount of money would have helped her a lot in managing her mortgage. So, but they decided not to challenge it. But the family relationships after that kind of fracture are never the same. In that family, no one speaks to that youngest daughter because they feel like they have you know, really missed out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So Alice, what about we've already got a will, but then there's a separation, a divorce that happens unexpectedly or people could see it coming a mile off.
Well, both of those things. As I say, it is the growing area. Separation in itself doesn't change the will, all right? It would continue. Mm-hmm. But what is happening more and more these days is that people are entering de facto relationships that can affect the will, and that is something to think about. If you are starting a relationship with a de facto partner, are you going to include them in your will? If you don't include them in your will, they are very likely to be someone who is going to contest the will because they're going to say, well, I'm in a close relationship, you know, we're effectively in a domestic relationship. I should have been thought of in this will. In having a divorce probably simplifies some matters. It does vary from state to state, let me just say. In New South Wales, a divorce revokes the gift to the spouse and revokes them as an executor. But I think in Victoria, it revokes, and I think in other states, it revokes the entire will.
Yeah,
so as soon as you divorce, you need to make a new will. It's one of the very high priorities that you need to be making. So let's talk about you start a new relationship, survived your divorce. What happens then? Mm-hmm. So you, as I said, in a de facto relationship, effectively it's a long-term relationship. Their children, that your new partner has children and you have children, what happens when you make the will? This is the same for a marriage, let me say. When you make the will, when you say, I'm going to give X to my children, do you mean your own personal biological children or do you mean the children of your partner as well? Mm. And this can be a very fraught area because the other children, the non-biological children, might think, well, you know, I was part of this family for X number of years. I have a right to be included. So it's not always about the actual dollar value of the gift to the beneficiary, whoever that might be. It's also that a will is related to the love that you feel for someone. So if you don't love someone, well, how better to express it than in your will? Or you do love someone, how better to express it? You need to get good legal advice about that. If you have children that, if you have children that you don't wish to include, you need to give reasons why you're not including them. For example, in my particular case, I have stepchildren. I mean, they're quite adult. But my will says it's because they will be provided for by their own parents. They don't need to rely on any assistance from me. And that's fair enough as well.
Yeah.
But it is a rather tricky situation. And if you look at it, I'll just talk about the New South Wales situation. If you want to make a family provision claim, they are entitled to make a claim against your estate. So my idea of a good will is a will that causes the least ongoing difficulties in the family situation that are left. It requires a balance of interests, but it should reflect what you really want to say, about your situation. So at this point, you can also think about giving a gift to a charity and that again needs to have good legal advice, because the names of charities change all the time, unfortunately.
They do, yes. Yeah, and giving to a charity, you can be asked, whether it's a set amount or whether it's a percentage of your assets or your estate?
Probably. I've always done it in set amounts myself. I wouldn't because it impacts the other beneficiaries as well.
It does.
And let me just say that where you have a gift to a charity, they can be very competitive in the family provision claims. They really like to insist on their gift.
Right.
They really do.
Yeah.
So anyway, this brings me, I've always thought that family provision claims are very interesting, arguments about estates, because you find out so much about family relationships. Right. You really do.
I'm sure you've had some families in front of you.
Well, no, I've never done very many of them. So I do think it's something you do want to avoid. You want to have an agreement so that people can live with whatever your gift has been. They don't want to just look back at you and say, oh, so and so, they didn't care about me, and look, the whole family's divided as a result.
Well, I've told my family, Alice, that I'm going to spend the lot before I die. One of my children took it very well indeed, said, have a wonderful time, Mum.
Well, but that's good for your children, yeah. But there's an awful lot that don't agree with that.
Yes, and I can understand that. Yeah, look, Alice, it's just been so helpful. Thank you for all that knowledge that you're sharing with us today. So, and we're going to talk again very shortly, okay?
Thank you.
About enduring power of attorney and those tricky things, the enduring guardianship or advanced care directions. Thanks, Alice. I'll see you again shortly.
Bye.